America and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting and, let's be honest, belated episode of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and joining me tonight is Chris Elogi and Teresa Sammons. It's going to be the three of us tonight. Yeah. You'll notice that Phil isn't here, and that's because Phil is having to build a new PC.
Yeah, the Russians took down his last one.
Mm-hmm. And he's Canadian, so that shit doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah,
somebody's got some really bad goddamn...
Well, he's associated with us.
Yeah.
Ah, yeah.
But anyway, the reason Phil's having to get a new piece, build a new PC is because the old one he was using kept freezing and then crashing on him.
Yeah, again, the Russians.
Yeah. Which is sort of the reason why some of our last couple of casts sounded kind of, I don't want to necessarily say choppy because he's that good of an editor, but you can notice some clips here and there. But that's the reason why, because at least once or twice during those casts, his PC would just give him the finger and go boom. So, anyway, while he is away, we've got Chris over here who's handling recording duties.
Yes, I have no idea who's going to edit this file, but that's somebody else's problem.
We're flying blind here, people. Look out. But anyway, so, as usual, some shit happened this week. We also were trying to bring in some shit from last week as well. Most of it, of course, involving the Trump administration. Including some stuff involving the Mueller investigation, basically the Trump administration, also still having trouble trying to figure out what they're supposed to do with all those immigrant families that, you know, they cruelly and maliciously split, you know, and putting children in cages and shit.
Yeah. They're doing what I do at my work, and I don't run a country.
We also found out this week about something involving McDonald's. Everybody knows how every year McDonald's will have the Monopoly game that they'll do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we found out something fascinating about that, and so fascinating that Ben Affleck bought the movie rights. We'll be getting to that later. Because Elon Musk has too much money for him to know what to do with. Tesla's going to be adding some Atari Classics to their new car update for some reason. We know it's all crazy. We also got some news involving Star Wars Episode 9. And, of course, a bunch of trailers from San Diego Comic-Con. Because, yeah, that happened.
Yeah. There were actually some cool trailers.
Yeah. But prepare yourselves because... That's only the tip of the iceberg of insanity that we have for you this week. So, with that said, we're going to do roundabout as we usually do for what we're up to. Teresa, we're going to start with you. What have you been up to this week?
When I'm not working, because I am, you guys, I'm still working. This is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now you have no time.
I have no friggin' time. Man, I got all sorts of new shit, and I got no time to play it. Mm-hmm. But I have been playing Octopath Traveler. We went out last Friday, actually, when we weren't doing this show. And I hopped into ye olde GameStop, and I saw something. I'm like, you got it in? They're like, yeah, we just got a couple of them in. I'm like, why don't you slide one over here?
Well, you got lucky, didn't you?
I did. I did. And, you know, I was like, maybe I shouldn't have bought it there because it was at the mall and it was this one mall in this one town and the tax is like fucking 11% there. The sales tax is 11%. I didn't care. I wanted that damn game. So, yeah, I've been playing that. And we've been watching Voltron on Netflix. We knew that it was out. We just had not quite gotten around to watching it. Mm-hmm. And now we're all over that. We are all over that. So that really is the long and short of it, other than...
So how far have you gotten in Octopath?
So I've got my top two dudes at about level 26 or so. The other guys are at 22, the ones that I have active right now. I am working on, what is his name, Ulbrich. I'm working on his second chapter. So I'm getting ready to brawl with some guys outside in the town and see if I could get...
Yeah, you might... I'm just going to go ahead and give you some advice. You might want to go out and go along and do some of the other stories in the meantime.
Do I need to get up to like 30 something before that?
Yeah, because, see, he's going to be going into a tourney, and there's like three opponents he has to face, and each one is more difficult than the last one.
Crap.
Fortunately, you can like save in between and like restock on stuff, but
Well, with some of the more, you know, leveled up, villagers that I've been challenging, I've been having some trouble, and I'm like, oh shit, I'm
Well, of course, it's also a 2-on-1 too, so.
Yeah. But I've also been working on Tress's second chapter, so, I could go back to doing that. Or I could go get, I think there's like three more people on my map that I could go and recruit, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really beautiful. I like the voice acting. I know you guys did like a whole episode on this, but I haven't, listened yet because, you know, me and spoilers, I get so crazy that I'm going to hear something that's going to ruin everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like that new Futurama, or well, it's not Futurama, whatever,
Disenchanted.
Yes, Disenchanted. I know the name. I know nothing else. So yeah, it's like that level of I like to go into everything blind as a bat. But I'm really enjoying the game. The music is pretty good, although I'm starting to hear some repetition in the, you know, in the songs and sound effects and whatnot. And it's starting to get a little eh. And some of the battles really are so repetitive. But, you know, it's just what it is. And it's, you know, there's a reason you have to do them. I need to grind a little more. So
yeah,
we grew
up on that shit, so we know how it goes. So
we did, but the voice acting is pretty good. Except I didn't like these two guys. That was it. That was about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of it, I think, is pretty good. And Ulbrich sounds a little bit like when Michael Dorn does I Am Weasel's voice. It's got that same cadence. I know it's not Michael Dorn, but it really sounds
good. I know.
Correct me up. But that's all I've been doing, man. Just those two things.
All right. Well, Chris, what about you?
Well, other than doing the quick troubleshooting for getting this whole thing working, that was a hell of a thing.
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, good luck if you're listening to this. Cause, you can tell that I don't do this. Like the last time I had a file saved off of this was from about 18 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that long ago.
Yeah, yeah. It tried to get me to update, during this whole process. Like, no, you're staying the same.
Man.
Yeah, so, other than that, I went and finished The Office on Netflix. I had the last two seasons. I was stuck somewhere in season 8. So I went and finished that, and it actually ends really well. It ends on a nice note, and it kind of just gets meta at a certain point, because obviously the whole point of the show is that there's this documentary being filmed. But they know that there's a documentary releasing in their version of the world that is about The Office. And so like Andy Bernard sees it and he starts arguing with people in the YouTube comments. You know, number one rule, don't interact with the comments, all that sort of stuff. Lots of weird shit happens. They finally realize that all their private moments have been getting recorded. It's like, what if we turn off our mics? Like, they have boom mics. They can hear you pretty good. it's some good stuff. There's some characters I didn't like. The CEO, James Spader, that's not a great character. I was glad to see him go. The Nelly, from the whole bit they do in Florida, at the home office where she's potentially running the Saber store that Dwight gets involved with. Like, I don't like her that much. But yeah, other than that, it's like everybody else is great. It's always like the Dwight, Jim, and Pam, relationship that, pushes the whole show forward.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it just ends really nicely. bad. The show was way too long. Just even per episode, it's like 40 some minutes. And it's like, Jesus Christ, you got 23 episodes a season. It's like, this is too much.
Wasn't a lot of that actually ad-libbed?
Probably some of it, yeah. Not really to spoil much, but Dwight gets to be manager towards the end, and the stuff that goes on with that is the best. Because Jim is his assistant, and there's this no-nonsense rule that he finds good ways to get around it. Especially trying to get his own assistant. And that whole thing is just great. As for games, I've been playing a lot of No Man's Sky. Now that big next update is out. I put probably a good 25 hours into it, since that came out. And it still has a good way to go. There's still plenty of things that you can look at and say, yeah, this needs more work and this needs more work and all that sort of stuff, but they're definitely on a good spot right now. I'm playing on PS4 Pro, and the performance is not great. I had some crashes here and there. But those usually after like 3 or 4 hours, and it's like, alright, that's a good way to end this session. Yeah. That might have gone on too long. Man, there are times where the frame rate drops a good bit, when it's trying to do too much. But other than that, it's still a lot of the same stuff, but they've reworked a lot of things, like the base building stuff. Now there's no limitations to that. Mm-hmm. So if you have the resources to add on, you can keep doing it. Which, if you go look at Sean Murray's Twitter account, he did a video of them just building continuously upward, mm-hmm. Up into the atmosphere and sort of jumping off, into a pool of water. Like they did kind of the thing that Crackdown has where you get up to the big tower. Probably somewhere near the end of the game, and you try and jump in that little pool. It's that sort of thing he did. Which was a pretty cool little video, and he's just been doing other videos, like showing off some of the cool stuff that they have in that game. It's one of those games that's nice and chill for the most part, like the same way, you know, Minecraft. I would spend like entire Saturdays just mining out a mountain so I can build my skyscraper higher. It's like tedious stuff that, you know, if you take a step back, you're like, why the fuck am I doing this? But it's just like, it's just fun and relaxing.
It's your meditation.
Yeah.
It's absolutely your meditation. That's cool.
Very much like just put a podcast on, just, you know, mind this stuff, work on the story quests, which now I'm trying to take down pirates, but I don't know how to get them to spawn. Then I'm just like, I don't really want to fight pirates.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta go get some ingredients to keep building new stuff. That's been a lot of fun to just keep digging at. I've not started up the PC version yet, but, I definitely want to check that out as well. See if it runs a little bit better on my PC. I also picked up Chasm this week, which is one of the big, there's a string of 4 Metroid, clones that are coming out over the next couple weeks. Chasm, Dead Cells, Death's Gambit, and Guacamelee 2. Conveniently coming out 1 week after another. And Chasm is the first one, and they love Symphony of the Night.
Mm.
And they have like a procedural generated world. It's like when you start up, it'll show you like the seed number for it. You're a knight that gets sent out to this mine that has been taken over by monsters. Some bad shit is going on, and all the people in the town have disappeared.
Isn't that normally the case with most survival horror games, or?
Yeah, except this isn't.
Something awful happened, and now shit's gone down, like.
Yeah, but the bad things haven't really happened. Like, people haven't been killed. They're just locked up in cages. You just gotta go find them. Break them out. And as you do that, you get more stuff in the town. Like the first one you find is the woman that opens up the shop. Or the magic shop, at least. So I have magic items. You know, Symphony of the Night, you have essentially 2 attack buttons you can equip stuff to. They have that here, square and circle. but instead of them both being universal, it's one is your melee and one is your magic item. It's like, you know, the power up item, not the power up items, like your axe, your knife, your holy water, that sort of stuff. That's your circle button here. That uses up your mana. And they all fall in the trap of having hearts drop that don't fill up your health. Like, that's all this stupid thing I didn't like about Castlevania. Yeah. It's like, oh, you're picking up the hearts that every other game uses as health pickups.
Yeah.
And they're your mana.
The thing about old Castlevania always stumped me. Like, why?
Yeah, it's, hey, this health thing, your heart, that doesn't refill your health. That's your mana.
What? Yeah.
It makes a lot more sense here. And so far I've been liking the combat a little bit. It feels clunky in the way that either I don't have the weapon that clicks with me, or it's just not, responsive enough. Cause I feel like I'm mashing, the square button a bunch to try to get out some rapid hits, and it's not happening as fast as it feels like it should. The mana item usually goes pretty fast, so it makes me feel like there's some randomness to the way the different weapons feel that isn't great.
Mm-hmm.
And another bit of bullshit they keep going from the Symphony of the Night is saves. You very much are going to be like save scumming.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, I got that in a really nice way, reminder to do that, cause I got to the first boss. There's a save spot right before it. And yeah, unlike Symphony of the Night, it's not like one big map, at least so far. It's been kind of moving between different areas, and those are like mini maps, essentially, so it's not like a big sprawling world, so far, but, so you kind of, like on this mine, there's like three levels I've been to. There's generally like one save spot on them. Usually after you go down like a Metroid style, like, elevator to the next area, which takes forever, but, whatever. But yeah, it threw me a save point right before the boss, and the boss was hard as hell. Especially because I had used a bunch of mana, because I just got the mana items, like, oh, I'm going to use this to get out of this, out of these, encounters. And I get to the boss fight, it's like, I'm going to get my ass kicked. I need to grind up some more mana. And so it ended up with me just going back a couple levels, breaking up the like lanterns they have, or some of the enemies will drop, little blue mana orbs, which is fun because they automatically, suck into you. And so I like, jumping around because the orbs will take forever to get to you if you just keep moving because they're trying to move towards your spot, and if you keep moving, it's a fun little game. Then I found out if you just go off screen, you lose them forever. So you can fuck around too much with that stuff, but, yeah, so this boss was hard as hell, and I beat it. It's like, alright, let's go to the next area. It's like, great, let's go. And I die in the next area, and I have to go back to before this boss fight. And it takes me forever again to beat it, because it's a hard-ass boss fight.
Yep.
It's like, oh yeah, I beat the boss fight eventually, and I go back and save. Fuck you to the guy that was like, hey, let's go forward. It's like, fuck you, I'm going back. I'm gonna sit here and yo-yo from the save spot, like I did in Symphony of the Night.
Mm-hmm.
And the next area is kind of, I don't really know how to describe it. It has zombies in it. It's kind of like a morgue, I guess, kind of area. Like lots of dead around. And I finally got like my first upgrade, that lets me not really wall climb. I can grab onto ledges essentially. So now there are a bunch of ledges on the sides of some of these steeper drops. So I get back up, which is nice. Makes getting around a little bit easier, but, yeah, I'm looking forward to put some more time into that. Yeah, so Symphony of the Night's less of the bullshit, but still some of the bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also been playing Forza 7, because I got that from the Prime Day. I think it was like half off for a code. It's like, all right, I'll jump into that. And that's a fucking weird-ass game. Weird for a Forza game, at least. It's not like Gran Turismo 6 that had lunar rover races.
Mm-hmm.
Cause they changed a lot of the progression and all that to make way for loot crates.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't put any real money into this. People complain enough that they didn't get to that point. And they just announced recently they're gonna remove that later this year. Which is good, but also people complain about this around the launch. Like, it took you 9 months to realize that. and by the point it gets out, it's gonna be at least out a year. They basically gotten far enough where it's like, alright, we're gonna finally listen to something you guys have been complaining about.
Yeah.
And the major issue I have is the mods, which, if you've played Forza games, you know, if you mess with the assist and you make them a little bit harder, you get increased, like, rewards, XP, money, all that sort of stuff. That doesn't happen anymore. You can make it harder all you want. You get no real benefits. I think if you mess with the AI, if you make the AI drive avatars harder, you get increased rewards. But other than that, the mods are a different type of crate that you get, that'll give you like little challenges, or if it's like the first few I opened, it's like all the same settings I had normally. But if you do that, you put them on, you get three you can equip at a time, and they'll either give you increased credits, this is money, or XP, or maybe both. But a lot of them are like, oh yeah, ABS is on and normal steering. It's like, that's what I had normally. There's no added challenge. I got some new ones I bought. It's like, you know, ABS off. It's like, oh, that'll be neat. Like, it's neat in the way of, like, here's some challenge, like, pushing you to challenge yourself more than the normal, like, safe way you would play Forza games. But I think they just go about this the worst way. And especially when there's VO, when you're starting up a game, you don't have any equips, like, hey, you should buy some prize crates and get some mods equipped. It's like, oh, fuck you, asshole. Sit here trying to tell me to fucking spend my money on loot crates. Especially because I'm trying to buy cars, because that's the other part, is that there's a whole kind of Pokemon-style collection system they're trying to push. Because they give you the nice big grid of all the cars, but they break them up into tiers. So it's like, you have to buy enough cars that are worth arbitrary amounts of points to level up your collection so you can get to the next tier. So like, I can't get access to like the most expensive cars or whatever, which is fine because I don't have the money for it either way. But it's still just a really weird progression system of locking you out of these cars, especially when they have Forzathon, which is like their games of service thing, where it gives you like three challenges a week to do. And a lot of them are like, you know, win a race at this track using this type of car. And like, one of the first ones I had was like hyper cars, and I looked, and they're like $2 million cars. It's like, I don't have that much money. I can't do this. I could probably start up an exhibition race and rented the cars or whatever. But it's like, yeah, just seeing all this weird shit, especially when the Forzathon stuff can make really specific requirements for cars and such. It's like, I have to keep going back forth from that part of the menu to the other part of the menu trying to figure out where the hell are these type of cars? Because it's not easy to parse what all's going there.
No, it isn't.
Because the different types of cars are, sorted by that way. So it'd be like, here are the rally, cars, here are the rally hero cars, here are the, the GT legends and the sports GT. And it's like all these weird classifications that, I don't know cars. I know they go. You push the you push down the pedal and they go. If it's not, something bad has happened. And so here they just put them all in these weird classifications. Like, you couldn't just let me click on this, click on the Forzathon challenge and like take me to the car collection and show me the car, specific cars that are included in this challenge. Like, no, you gotta make it real fucking hard. And there was one I did the other day. It's like, you need to get this specific car. And it's like a Ferrari something. The name is so long, it's cut off on the Forzathon challenge. There's two of those type of cars. It's like, the letters on the end is like GTM or GTL. So I did a race with one of them. I was like, oh, it didn't pop, so I gotta go fucking do it again with the other one. Mm-hmm. I was also trying to remember which one I did or didn't do with. So I was like, you could do this so much easier. But the system works a lot better in Horizon, where it's just like, go do some jumps. Okay, that's something I can do. I can do fucking jumps, not find a specific car and hope I can either buy it or rent it or whatever. We'll probably talk more about that on Sunday, because the news is pretty interesting. Yeah, that's been kind of it. I got WarioWare Gold, and there's a lot of story in that game for a WarioWare game.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's more VO by Wario than I think any Mario character ever, total, in this one game. He wants to make the money, he's doing the esports. He talks a lot about that. He's like running tournaments and shit. And streaming, and that's how he's getting his money this time. He's begging his friends to make games for him to get the money. It's like, he seems like a really shitty friend. But I guess that's the Wario character.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll probably talk more about that on Sunday. Once I get some more time into it.
But yeah.
Yeah, how about you, Brandon?
Alright, I'm still knee-deep in Octopath. I have officially finished all of the second chapters for all the characters. I'm now going headlong into the chapter threes. And those are hard.
Oh, boy.
Like, pretty much everything else in the game. Fortunately, I've figured out ways to sort of move around and manipulate the whole job system, so that I can, you know, get some additional abilities from my characters, and it helps. Also, just in general, going around and having either trying to get an NPC to come along with you, which in the game, if you want to get an NPC, you can either use the allure ability that Primrose has, which is basically just a seduction ability. Mm-hmm. And, no, it doesn't really matter the gender. She can usually do it pretty easily. Or you can, try and appeal to their good sides with Ophelia? Yeah, the cleric. And what that'll do is, you basically live in a world of badasses, and most of the NPCs will tend to have something pretty, pretty helpful with them. Like some of the bigger ones you can get will do help increase your armor for a couple turns, or they'll decrease the armor for the enemy, or they'll have like some big powerful attack that can attack all of the enemies at once, which is especially helpful in some of the later boss battles, because eventually some of those boss battles, they actually start sending in minions to help fight with them. And the thing is, if there's some minions fighting with them, it'll actually block off some of their weaknesses of the main boss. In some cases, it'll even just straight off make them invulnerable to attack until you get rid of their minions. But yeah, like, we did a whole episode about Octopath, so if you guys have been listening, you know what we're talking about. So yeah, that's, an Octopath. Reading a bunch as usual. Especially I've been sort of looking into my textbooks I got for my medical billing and coding course. Three nice thick ones. Two of them are actually sort of printed versions of some of the courses I'm taking. And one of them is this very large, very heavy, and very thick, medical terminology index book. Which eventually I'm also going to get the ICD-10 coding book, which I got to use when I start doing the actual code part of the medical coding process. Of course, I've got, you know, Funimation and Crunchyroll. On Funimation, I've actually been watching, because Legend of Galactic Heroes, Dina Thieves, the new version of Galactic Heroes, its season ended, its first season. So I've been kind of having to find other stuff on there. One of the ones I found really liking in spite of itself is High School D&D. or DXD or DD. I'm not sure how you're supposed to pronounce that. You guys know what I'm talking about, right? It is one of those anime that is actually really good in spite of all the gratuitous fan service it uses. Just boobs galore, just everywhere. At least a couple times per episode. And yet somehow it still manages to be really good. Oh, and on Crunchyroll, I finally finished up Thunderbolt Fantasy, which is, for those of you who don't remember, that is the Gen Orochi / Peely studio. That is the punk drama. That's basically all sword fights and stuff like that. I finally finished it, and holy crap, it goes in some weird directions towards the end. Kind of just takes the whole plot and turns it on its head. But it's damn good stuff. I know Teresa's watched bits and pieces of it.
Yep.
Don't let the idea that it's with puppets fool you. It works. It works very well.
Yes. Crazy well, actually.
Yeah. In fact, there are ways where you're like, how the hell has no one tried doing this before? Because it works so well. But anyway, so yeah, that's pretty much been what I've been up to this week. Anybody got anything else they want to add?
Nah.
No?
Nope.
Nah.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, I think it's time for everybody's favorite part of the show, which is Brian's Random Factoid. And this week, I want to talk about an individual. Just very briefly, I may do a more in-depth thing on him some other time, but since we're kind of, it's kind of an unorthodox show we're having this week, I'll just touch upon him a little bit briefly. So back when NASA first came into existence, NASA was basically, it came into existence right about the late 40s, mid 50s. But before that, it was mostly made up of various, either government or academy funded or just hobby groups. One of these groups was called the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And it was basically made up of a group of rogues, misfits, mad scientists, and complete lunatics who basically were trying to find ways to harness rocket power. And also, so some of them just really liked blowing shit up. Well, eventually, Jet Propulsion Laboratory would eventually be absorbed into NASA, and they would be the people who would eventually help construct NASA's rocket program and furthermore work on planetary robotic spacecraft. So you're thinking, so why am I talking about this? Well, there was one guy who was a founding member and one of its principal members of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. He was a dude from L.A., California by the name of Jack Parsons. And Jack Parsons was a couple of things. So, first of all, what you need to do is, like, again, he was a member of the JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. He was actually a college dropout. Originally, he went to Pasadena Junior and Stanford University. Eventually, he had to drop out because the Great Depression hit and he couldn't afford it. So, eventually, what happened is in 1934, he and a couple of other friends got together to start up something called the Guggenheim Aeronautical Laboratory with Caltech. Eventually, they ended up forming a couple other organizations that would eventually become JPL, and that, of course, would eventually be absorbed into NASA.
Mm-hmm.
He was involved in helping to create the what is the principal rocket fuel that NASA would use for several decades, and he was actually doing rocket experiments as early as 1928. The other thing you need to know about Jack Parsons is that he was way, way into black magic. He was a convert and a member of the OTO, the Ordo Templi Orientis, which was an organization that was founded and headed by Aleister Crowley. Any of these names familiar so far?
No, especially not Crowley.
Okay, Crowley was basically the godfather of 20th century witchcraft. That's basically what you need to know. He was the founder of a religion called Thelema, and the primary, at least in the United States, of the OTO was founded by him. It was called the Agape Lodge, and it was in California. He became its leader in 1942, Parsons, not Crowley, and ran the lodge from a mansion he had in on Orange Grove Avenue. Eventually, he ended up, because of his thing with his relation with Thelema and with the OTO, he actually was expelled from Aerojet and JPL in 1944 because they thought it was too unorthodox and non-Christian. But he was really into this shit. He would actually, like, chant a prayer to the god Pan before every rocket experiment. Eventually, he started deciding, you know what, I'm going to start doing some old serious rituals in my own house, you know, with blackjack and hookers. And he had a neighbor that worked with him. He knew of, he was friends with. Because remember, this is California, this is Los Angeles, right?
Okay.
So, down the street from him, he lived to a guy he had known for a couple of years. He was a pulp writer. He wrote for pretty much all the pulps for just about every genre you could think of. Science fiction, horror, westerns, detective stories, romance, you name it. The dude was notoriously prolific. He would get like a butcher's paper, you know, the mm-hmm. long rolls of butcher's paper, and he would like put it in his typewriter, and he would like have the butcher's paper on a roller so he could just basically keep typing and not have to worry about adding a new page. That's how prolific he was.
That's inventive too. I like that.
Yeah. And he also got into the black magic stuff and joined up with OTO with Jack Parsons. You know what his name was? Lafayette Ron Hubbard.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah,
well, of course he was going to
L. Ron Hubbard. Yes, yep. Him. That same guy.
You're putting that very politely.
Yeah. And as you can imagine, Lafayette Ron Hubbard, being who he was, would eventually make off with Jack Parsons' girlfriend with a lot of the money that he and Jack had been raising to start another lodge in California. By the way, some of that money would eventually go to use to helping found Scientology.
Yep.
So eventually Jack Parsons got just really low, and he decided, you know what, fuck this, I'm gonna try and summon the Antichrist. So he started what he called the Babylon Working, which was a ritual that was supposed to, invoke Babylon, which was like a goddess in the Thelema religion. And he eventually met this red-headed woman named Marjorie Cameron. He married her in 1946. And then they kept having a bunch of like tantric sex rituals, and they were trying to summon the Antichrist. Eventually the relationship would fall through, and because Jack had basically been forced out of Jet Propulsion Laboratory, he would have to do a bunch of odd jobs. Like, for example, he was a consultant for Israel's rocket program, and eventually he was forced out of the profession altogether in 1952 when they discovered some of his early, during World War II, some of his early flirtations with the Communist Party, because, you know, McCarthyism and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, he ended up dying in 1952 at the age of 37 because of he apparently had done something with the chemicals that he was experimenting with in his garage, and they exploded.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, Jack Parsons is one of those guys. It's like, you can get a great screenwriter to come up with that. Because his life story is just so weird. There's a fantastic book out there, if you ever get a chance, about his life called Sex and Rockets, and it's basically about his life story, and it is just beyond bizarre. So yeah, that was, Jack Parsons. He, lived fast and died hard. And that has been another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Okay. Alright then. So, moving on, it's, I guess, now time to start the show proper. And as always, we gotta start off with our assholes of the week. And, basically, it was our assholes of the week is the people from the Department of Justice. So, as you know, there's been this awful situation that's happened at the border where immigrant families have been forcibly separated. And, it's just been an awful mess. We all know this.
Yep.
Well, the ACLU sort of got like I guess it's like a collection lawsuit together. And they went before a federal judge. And of course the judge basically said that, as you may know, they said, look, you gotta get these families back together. This isn't right.
Yeah.
And so, the Department of Justice gave their answer. They said, hey, ACLU should be the ones to reunite the families.
Uh-huh.
And the ACLU and all the other advocacy groups. Like, this is what a businessman does, is delegate things to other people that, for what they don't want to do. But that doesn't work for the government.
Yeah.
No.
And
for the record, the judge answered back and said, no, it's you guys need to be doing this.
Yeah, I got some statements here. The reality is there's still close to 500 parents that have not been located. Many of these parents were removed from the country without their child. All this is a result of the government's separation and then inability and failure to track and reunite. And the reality is that for every parent who is not located, there will be a permanent orphaned child, and that is 100% the responsibility of the administration.
Yeah. Now, you will note that they said 500. That's actually lower than it was started.
Yeah, they have reunited some.
Yeah, there has been a little bit of progress, but frankly, it hasn't been enough.
Yeah, they got another line here. In reviewing the status report, it appears that only 12 or 13 of close to 500 parents have been located, which is just unacceptable at this point.
Right.
They've had like a month or so to get all their paperwork in order.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, I remember reading this a while ago, I don't know if it was true or not, but they had just trashed a lot of the documentation.
Yeah.
At a certain point.
Yeah, they just straight up threw that crap in the shredder. They really did.
I was like, oh, good, you caused your own problems.
Yeah.
And we've had kids who've been sexually abused.
We got the story about that this week. About a dude who was accused of molesting over a dozen immigrant kids in that caretaker center.
Like, has there been one that's died from illness?
Yeah. Caught
from the other kids?
One of them, I think. Mm-hmm.
So that's great.
Yeah, wonderful.
And yeah, are you?
Should have ever happened.
No, it shouldn't have happened. There was a much for better solutions, but you know, somebody up there in the administration. I'm not naming names, Stephen Miller, decided that they just wanted to make someone bleed. And that's what they did.
Like, if they wanted none of this backlash, they should have let them come in for the asylum stuff and just deny them.
Yeah.
Legally, that...
Yeah. Except that they were turning people away from the asylum ports.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
And arresting them for not doing it legally. It's like,
mm-hmm.
You're forcing them to do that this way.
Yeah. A phrase self-fulfilling prophecy comes in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is going to be a lifetime of... I mean, a lot of these kids are now going to have intellectual disabilities because they are at such a critical development stage, and they have been ripped from their primary caregiver, and they internalize all this as some sort of punishment, and their brain literally stops growing. I mean, it just stops growing. This is unbelievably awful. I don't have to tell you guys.
Yeah. I want to say there was a story about a girl who, when she was taken, they were telling her her mom didn't want her anymore, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So when she eventually got reunited, she just did not want to be around her mom anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So all because of these assholes just filled her mind with shit.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And, you know, a lot of the kids that are coming out of this and kids, they parse through things in their play when they're younger. And the boys who are coming out of it, they don't want to play with minions anymore. They want to pretend to have guns in their waistbands and put handcuffs on other immigrant children.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I just...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... But here is the positive side. We are in the process. Obviously, the anger became an international issue.
Mm-hmm.
People realized this wouldn't stand, and people are actually doing something about it.
Yeah.
So this would be so much worse if people just didn't care.
Yeah.
But they do. People care a lot.
Yeah, one of the charities that has been taking money is what, Races? R-A-I-C-E-S. I know Felicia Day did a big stream raising money. She raised something like $220,000.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was initially expecting like $12,000. And went way over that.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have been doing that stuff, and that's cool to see.
Yep.
Should not have happened in the first place. But the people in charge
let me bring this up because, just sort of. One of I go and see a therapist every few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm having my next session Tuesday. And she is, first of all, she's Jewish. And she's also an Army veteran. She did, a lot of, when she was in the Army, she was stationed over in Germany, in Berlin, back in the 80s and 90s. And, I asked, you know, she said, because she, being Jewish, of course, she went into the Holocaust Memorial and she saw she went and toured some of the concentration camps and the memorials they've had there. And she basically told me this. She said, the big difference between the United States and Germany is that Germany is far more homogenous than the United States could ever hope to be.
Yeah.
And because of that, it was much easier for the Nazis to be able to commit their crimes because enough people were able to just sort of shrug their shoulders and just say, it's not my problem.
Yeah.
She said, you should really be concerned if that was something like that would happen in the United States. But because the United States is so diverse, and because opinions go every which way, something like that can never happen in permanence. Somebody always has, there will always be somebody that will stand up and say no.
Yeah.
So, you know, just, if you ever get to a point where it seems like you're just in the depths of despair, always remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, though, we definitely do have our, awful history of things that just went too far. You know, slavery, all of the things that came out of that we're still dealing with.
In relations to, what we're doing right now, something that happened when, Eisenhower was president. You ever heard of something called Operation Wetback? It was a mass deportation of Mexican immigrants that happened in the late 50s.
Yeah.
No, I
look
didn't
it up
hear
sometime.
About that.
Yeah, look it up sometime. It's it kind of mirrors a lot of what happened in this current administration, and the basic lesson to learn from is that it didn't work. pretty much all those people eventually came back, and the only thing it succeeded in doing is splitting families apart.
Yeah.
It was a bunch of money wasted, basically. But to sort of move on from that before it gets too depressing, we're going to talk about our hero of the week. And our hero of the week is none other than LeBron James. You know, make whatever opinion you want of him as an athlete, but
people have opinions.
Oh, yes, they do.
That's...
But when it comes to stuff off the court, he's actually very charitable and philanthropic. And this week, he officially opened his I Promise school in Akron, Ohio.
Yep, it is a public school. Mm-hmm. So it is part of the Akron school system, which is different from some things that other players have done, you know, like private schools or charter schools, which all have their own potential issues and all that.
Oh, yes.
And supposedly good things they can do. I've not looked into those things to see if they have lived up to their potential or whatever. But here, LeBron James is from Akron, Ohio. He's very much grew up to a single mom household, knowing the struggles that you can have as a black kid. I think he talked about how he missed 83 days of school when he was in fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of having to get a real wake-up call from people in the school and his own mom and all that to get him back on track. And ever since he got to the NBA has gotten money, he has worked very hard to give back to his community, especially the at-risk kids that are there. And so part of that, you might remember quite a while ago, he promised like a class of kids, you know, if you do well, do everything, don't get in trouble, and get accepted into college, I will pay for your tuition.
Yeah,
which if you've seen The Office, there's an episode where Michael Scott tries to do the same thing to awful consequences. And yeah, that's some of the great stuff he's done. And so yeah, he started the I Promise School, not too far away from his high school, St. Vincent, St. Mary. And this, at least this year, it is open to third and fourth graders, 240, 120 each from those classes. It's going to open up to 1 year before and 1 year after every year. So next year it'll have, second to fifth graders. Then it'll be first to sixth and then seventh and eighth the years after that. So it'll be 1 to 8. I assume the high school is 9 to 12. And yeah, they picked out, kids that were at risk. Definitely some that needed help. The great thing also is that this is not just for the kids. The parents also, get a lot of help if they need it. They can get GED courses there, job placement, and a lot of help like that. The kids get, it's a longer school day, I think it's 7 to 5. So they get free breakfast, free lunch, and snacks, to help pay for that stuff. And kind of one of the things is just keeping the kids busy with schoolwork. Not letting them have, you know, idle time that they could get into trouble and all that sort of stuff. Which is, you know, a really great thing for those sorts of kids. I think there's lots of other perks. I think he's given each of them a bike and a helmet. Cause he talked about as a kid, one of his favorite things to do is, get on his bike and just explore the other neighborhoods nearby. And that's probably also one of the good ways that he can help ensure some of those kids can actually get to school. I think they also have free transportation for kids that are within like 2 miles of the school. Sort of just another added way of getting them in just to make sure and, remove as many barriers as they can. But yeah, this is, 9 to 5 it is. So, they have STEM-based programs. So it's all complimentary in that. They'll have summer sessions, 7 weeks there. They run from July to May for the school year. They spend time each day on social emotional learning, participate in a supportive circle after lunch aimed at helping them refocus on work. They get lunch, free breakfast, lunch, snacks, and drinks. They got a fitness trainer to help them exercise and all that. There's just a lot of great stuff here. And it's cool that, you know, a basketball player that, if you remember a few months ago, Laura Ingram was telling him to shut up and dribble. He basically shows why they should not. And use some of his, wealth in reaching his communities. and sort of something that a lot of players should be doing. Yeah.
You know, that's true. There really is. There's a lot that they can be doing.
Because they get a lot of money more than they could ever spend.
Yep.
And they enjoy that in the sense of like, oh, I get some security finally, because a lot of them grew up in, you know, poor circumstances like that. You know, they could put their parents up in, you know, nice homes, all that sort of stuff, so they never have to worry about, you know, bills or anything like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know LeBron did that with his mom, made sure she never had to worry about food or money or any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She might actually just live with them in their house in Akron. But yeah, like that sort of security is great for them, but also investing in the communities. Like you probably saw after the shooting in, where was it at down in Florida? I forget the Parkland. Dwayne Wade was doing a lot of stuff down there, like visiting the kids, and doing a lot of, charity work for them. Sort of, that's down in their, his neck of the woods, and that's great stuff that they do as well. So yeah. Athletes do have a lot of ability to affect people more than they may even think, they can. And that's always good when you see like this, this kind of stuff when people take full advantage of the platforms they have to offer.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it makes you,
that's right.
Realize how much of a shithead Michael Jordan was. Cause he is a notorious asshole.
Oh yeah, he is.
He also had a Hitler mustache for an extended period of time.
Yeah, or they called it a soul patch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're hawking underwear while having Hitler's mustache on your face.
Alright, well, alright, so, now then it's time to start the proper show proper. And, first thing we got, first story of the night. This week the Department of Justice and of course Attorney General Jeff Sessions came out and announced the quote, Religious Liberty Task Force.
Oh yeah, they're gonna work on making sure all the religions that exist in this country, are treated fairly and justly, right?
Yeah, that's not happening.
Strict adherer to the Flying Spaghetti Monster, and I feel completely underrepresented. What are they going to do to help me?
Well, that's for a reason.
Yeah.
Because nobody cares. That's an internet religion.
That's
a meme religion. Those don't last.
Yeah, so basically the primary reason this they started this thing is because of the... Ever since, of course, when the Supreme Court decided that same-sex marriage was legal. Of course, there were a bunch of weddings planners, bakeries, and flower shops who decided that because of as they said, their sincerely held religious beliefs, so they didn't want to contribute to it.
Okay.
And of course, there's also the occasion where you have people who have even less of an excuse, you know, city planners or, you know, people working for the county who just decide they're not going to give marriage certificates even though they're legally bound to do so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly this is just a bit of a crypto-theocratic motion to sort of shore up support from the Trump's evangelical base, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you're right, it absolutely smacks of trying to turn the country into a theocracy.
Yeah.
Which
his base would love to do.
Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I'm also pretty sure that at least a good chunk of this is unconstitutional.
Yeah.
It damn well better be.
I would not be surprised if as soon as they try to do something, you're going to hear a lawsuit from some organization. Station, perhaps People for the American Way or something.
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's talking here about there's some sort of dangerous movement, undetected by many, is now challenging and eroding our great tradition of religious freedom. There can be no doubt this is no little matter. It must be confronted and defeated.
So why don't you fucking name it, asshole?
Yeah.
What are you hiding behind? What are you chicken shit up? Name it. Tell us.
It's like nobody's taking away your fucking religious freedom. They're giving freedoms to people that have been long persecuted by the religious people in this country.
Yeah, they're just being all bitchy about the war on Christmas, and they're being all bitchy about the Starbucks cups.
God. Oh no, we have to treat the gays with respect now.
No,
oh, no,
they are not going to, they are not going to use this to protect the freedoms of Muslims who are being trampled upon still to this day. You know, that's the crazy thing. And I'm going to say this, and I really, I swear to God, I don't mean it in a funny way, but nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition, and this could become it. If it doesn't smack down, like you said, by the Supreme Court, but.
Which it probably will be.
Well, what the fuck is Trump doing to the Supreme Court? You know? It worries the shit out of me. You know, how much longer before we're all muttering under his eye?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But really, I honestly am not seeing much of a threat from it, simply for the fact that it just seems more of a publicity ploy more than anything.
Yeah.
Well, what is it that they're trying to draw attention away from this week? There's something rather significant, and I can't remember what it is.
Oh, yes. Gee, I wonder it is. Could it be a former member of the Trump administration? His campaign head is now on trial?
Currently?
I want to see the quotes from the jurors' selection. Who got denied from that?
That is going to be just an endless source of comedy.
So you know the Martin Shkreli stuff was genius.
Because people just couldn't. They kept having to let people off the jury because people hated his guts.
God, what did they call him? Like a
snake,
beady-eyed little weasel face.
Yeah.
Or something?
Yeah.
There's the one guy who said, "You don't disrespect the Wu-Tang."
Oh, God.
It's like, oh yeah, there's a guy that knows his priorities.
It's like, so, let's make that guy president.
If they release this, we're going to have a very special episode of this weekend.
Oh,
we'll
yeah.
Talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So really, for right now, I don't really have much concern for this. You should be concerned once, like, something big starts to come out of it. Because for right now, this seems more of a smokescreen than anything.
Yeah. If you start seeing some Game of Thrones shit happening, then we got to stop that.
Yeah.
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 Alright, so moving on from there, kind of related to something we talked about just a few minutes ago, a federal judge has basically ordered the Trump administration that it needs to restore DACA to what it originally was.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is the same judge that before told them they couldn't shut it down. They didn't have sufficient reasoning for why it should be shut down. But yeah, so they have to, let's see, given 20 days to respond and appeal if they want, but otherwise they have to, I think they resumed, taking applications, renewals. Mm-hmm. I think they were supposed to be taking applications for new people, and that's part of this. They're going to have to get that going. Just basically get everything going again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is good, because this is a years-long and extremely expensive process.
Yeah.
For the people who are trying to get their citizenship, they're spending thousands on this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
you actually, when you research the citizenship and how to become a citizen, after a while you start to realize that it's way too convoluted for its own good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, we often complain about, quote-unquote, illegal immigration and stuff, but then you find out how difficult it is to actually become a citizen. Like, even Canada is easier to get into.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that thing where people bitch about piracy. Well, if it was accessible, there would be almost no reason to pirate things.
Yeah.
So basically, like, to get into Canada, all you have to do is you have to have a job lined up. You have to have somebody to sponsor you. You have to take the citizenship test. And I think you have to have a minimum amount of money that you can come in with you. And, that's it.
It's not quite that cut and dried. That makes it sound really simple. But like that citizenship, that test.
Yeah. Keep in mind, I'm talking about Canada here. So.
Yeah.
Right. even though we are native English speakers, if I want to go to Canada, I still have to sit that test and prove that I'm a native English speaker. It's only given in my area, I think, 4 times a year, and I am in a major metropolitan fucking area.
Yeah.
It's not super easy to get to. It's, like, way the fuck up north of fucking Skokie. And I think it's, like, $250 for me. It'll be $250 for my husband. Kid won't have to take it. But for some people, that's a big hurdle. And then I believe for us, as a family of three, that we would have to have, I think, something like $22,000 or $27,000 in the bank before we could move.
Oh, that's easy. Not,
yeah, right? Super easy.
Yeah, that's like that, the, some opinion article's like, oh, people should go take more vacations and get out of the country. You just have to have $100,000 in the bank and a job that gives you $250,000 a year. It's like, oh yeah, that's something everybody has.
No, and passports are not easily obtainable for people who don't have a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like $150 or $125 to get a passport. And for some people, that will absolutely put them off. And it has to be renewed every 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody has money flowing out their sphincters.
Yeah. In case you haven't figured out by now, Teresa has seriously considered becoming a Canadian citizen. So.
Yeah, this thought process started when my son was about 1 year old.
Yeah.
And I cannot tell you that I feel more at rest than I did when he was one about the direction in which the whole country is going. And, you know, I've had conversations with people online and in person. They're like, well, you gotta stay and you gotta make the country better. You know what? Maybe that's a valid point, but when the shit hits the fan, I'm gonna take care of my kid.
When was your kid born? When was your son born?
07.
Oh.
07. So not too long after that, well, we already had, I had concerns. I had concerns. We'll just put it that way. Homeland Security really bothered me for a while, and I know that was in place beforehand. But, I don't know, you know, I really thought that at some point there could be retribution visited upon our family for us having opinions. You know, he's not, you know, he's not a dumb kid. He's aware of everything that's going on in the world, too aware, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And when he found out that when he turns 18, he is required by law to register, you know, with the military to be drafted, if possible.
Yeah.
He said, and he still asks me this to this day, he'll ask me, if that happens, will you take me to Canada? He's petrified of it.
Yeah.
He's been petrified of it for 2 years. He doesn't want to fight for things that he thinks are wrong. So, anyway.
Jesus Christ. Okay. When I was his age, I don't think I had anything like that worry.
No, we were.
I just knew Bill Clinton was president. It was like, okay, I don't know what's going on here.
And what's the cheat code for this game? And that was the extent of our concerns.
Pretty much. Anyway, okay, so get off to a less depressing.
We'll get
kind of be. Yeah. Alright. So, moving on from there, so there's been this weird conspiracy theory that people say it's kind of new. It's actually, I think it kind of started sort of the tail end of last year.
Yeah.
But basically it's called QAnon. And basically how this whole thing started is that some of you may remember back a short while back, Trump was having a photo op. I think he was with like a dignitary or something. He may have been overseas. He may have been here in the U.S. I can't remember. I've kind of blotted it out of my mind. But while they were doing this photo op, you know, they had the camera, you know, with film, you know, rolling live footage. And he said, can you guys hear that? Everybody's listening. It's like, is that? He says, maybe it's the calm before the storm. And somebody in the crowd that was like doing the footage was like, what's the storm? He says, you'll find out. And that's basically how the whole QAnon thing started, because suddenly everyone in the alt-right thought came to the idea that the storm was going to be this, military coup that was going to apparently purge, quote-unquote unpatriotic or treasonous people within the FBI and CIA. And, it's, parts of the quote-unquote deep state.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, the deep state.
Yeah. Here's the fun part. Bob Mueller is involved in this, but he's actually going to be the guy who's going to blow the deep state part wide open. So
okay. This is just a fun little theory, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just weirdly convoluted. And there's far too many people who believe in it, because at a recent Trump rally, and I think it was, what was it, Philly? Was it in Pennsylvania?
Where does it say it was at? Florida. It was on Tuesday.
Florida, okay, it was in Florida. You suddenly started showing people showing up with signs and t-shirts saying, "We are Q."
You can probably guess where in the internet this whole thing kind of started.
8chan!
Yep, 4chan and 8chan.
Well, specifically 8chan.
Okay. It says here 4chan is also
but
a big part.
It's mostly 8chan.
Okay.
And I'm absolutely convinced that whoever this QAnon guy is actually just some dude screwing around with these people. And he's probably laughing his ass off, because what he basically does is he drops little crumbs here and there. Because he's claiming that he's a member of the State Department that's gone rogue. And,
so basically in the opposite direction of the other ones?
Yeah. And, basically they're the ones who sort of fed into this whole conspiracy thing.
Okay.
And it's just, obviously it's a load of garbage, but people who were, unfortunately can get caught and dragged into that stuff have bought it hook, line, and sinker.
Roseanne Barr.
Oh, she gets into all the conspiracies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. That's why she got in trouble. She believes it all.
There was also,
Kurt Schilling.
Mother. Yeah, Kurt Schilling.
All around a reasonable guy.
Yeah.
I basically
tweeted to him, like, "Wait, Kurt, aren't you the guy who basically conned the state of Rhode Island into paying millions of dollars of taxpayers' money into your video game startup?"
Yeah.
You don't exactly have a whole lot to stand on when it comes to ethics, you thief.
Did you see the whole thing where some guy was on the same flight as him this past week and was shit-talking him on Twitter? Then he had his sons meet up with the guy when he landed.
Uh-huh.
It's like, oh, this isn't thuggish at all.
Not one bit.
Send your kids to defend you or whatever. I don't know. Michael Avenatti's taking this as, I don't know, he has a tweet here, "The more conspiracy theorists attack me, the more confident I become. Shows they see me as a significant threat to Mr. Trump and his continuation in office. They should, because I am. Hashtag Basta. Hashtag Fight Club." I don't know what those hashtags are, but.
Yeah.
It takes a guy like that to take down Trump, but whatever, that's fine.
On the one hand, I respect him, and on the other hand, he is a little too into getting attention for himself, but.
Well, I guess that's good for his business.
Yeah. But, anyway, so, yeah, if you just, that's just sort of of a warning in case any of your older relatives get sucked into this whole thing, so you'll kind of know where to start and to help hopefully get them out of it before it's too late. Because this type of shit has a tendency to grow into Jonestown, and I don't want another Jonestown.
No, right.
Yeah, some of it becomes more like Pizzagate, where it dies off at some point.
Yeah. All right, next up, we got a story out of Virginia. So, as everybody knows, the midterms are going to be coming up in November. And over in Virginia, a Democrat for what a particular position is?
It's for the House of Rep, Congress.
Oh, it's the House seat. Okay.
Yeah.
The Virginia Democrat has started, of course, because it's campaigning, so everybody's got to throw dirt at each other, and honestly, I thought this was kind of a low blow, because trust me, there's much worse stuff you could pin on this guy. But for whatever reason, she decided to go into the point that apparently this dude's been writing Bigfoot erotica.
Yeah, he is a quote devotee of Bigfoot erotica. I was just like, okay, politics has gotten real good now.
Mm-hmm.
She said, my opponent, Denver Riggleman, that's a hell of a name, running mate of Corey Stewart, was caught on camera campaigning with a white supremacist. Now he has been exposed as the devotee of Bigfoot erotica. This is not what we need on Capitol Hill.
Like I said, that early part is like, there's much worse.
And there's a picture of his art.
Yeah.
Cover art for his book, I guess.
So, for those of you who don't know, on Amazon, especially on Kindle, there's like this big market for like ebooks involving like
lots of erotica.
For like, you know, stuff like Taken by the T-Rex or, you know, Enslaved by the Orcs or stuff like that.
Honestly, I looked at that stuff before and a lot of it's free if you want to check it out.
Yeah, most of it is. Or it's like $1.
Yeah.
Get on Kindle. But apparently he does some of that. And, again, like I said, don't get him on that. That's just kink shaming. Trust me, there's much more stuff you could get on this guy. Yeah. Like that whole thing where he's campaigning with a white supremacist. That should be, good enough.
Yeah. But I guess if you want to stigmatize him to voters, that's probably a pretty good way to go. Especially when they see the picture. Which I love when they censor dongs, because you can just tell by how long it is, sort of what's going on here.
Yep.
It's like, oh, okay, that's what Bigfoot's packing, I guess.
So apparently that's, you know, that's what's happening in the streets right now.
Yeah, this is, I heard people that follow, like, the various, like, House seats, election stuff, like, this is supposed to be one of the most entertaining of them all.
Yeah.
That seems like it's well worth it.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, House seats like that, they're always the ones that end up going in the weirdest directions because it's like very local.
Yeah.
And because of that, you get stuff like having the GOP sending out flyers warning potential Democratic voters about the fact that, you know, their candidate is about their Warcraft character.
Yeah. And that's how Illinois has one guy running for the GOP that is an out Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because nobody else ran against him.
Yeah.
Nope, because it'll go to a Democrat.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, by the way, speaking of weird...
Oh, okay. Stuff, this district that they're running in also includes one Charlottesville, Virginia.
Uh-huh.
So this guy might actually have a chance of winning. Because I guess they kind of lean a little bit Republican.
Yeah.
So we might have a Bigfoot erotica guy in the House of Representatives.
Yeah. But, moving on from weird local politics, you know who the new mayor of Knox County, Tennessee is? It's Kane. You know.
The big red demon.
Yeah. AKA the Undertaker's younger brother.
AKA Glenn Jacobs.
Yep.
Apparently he's also a libertarian. He runs as Republican, but he's libertarian.
Yep.
But yeah, he's been wanting to run for this for a while. Mm-hmm. Ended up winning, about twice as many votes as his opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not really a ton here, just it's interesting that a wrestler is now the mayor of Knox County, Tennessee, which includes Knoxville.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Yep.
Oh, man. You know, I have a feeling that in the future, politics in the United States are going to get weirder and weirder.
I mean, this isn't the first wrestler that has had a major political career, though.
Oh, Jesse Ventura was governor of Minnesota.
Yeah,
so.
And then he went crazy.
No, he's always been crazy.
Well, publicly, people came to realize that.
That's better.
Yeah. And then the Sklar Brothers podcast had somebody imitate him, just made it even crazier.
Yeah.
Especially just having him recite website names, because he over-pronunciates the W's. Dabba ya dot. conspiracy.biz.
Yeah.
It's just hilarious shit. It's like, as crazy as it goes, it's like, this probably isn't all that far off.
Yeah. But, who's ready for, like, you know, Beyonce ends up becoming governor of, I don't know, California in, like, the 2030s or something?
I don't know why she would. She's got...
Yeah, I wouldn't know why she would either. She's making too much money right now.
Yeah.
But, alright, so, moving on from there. So, you guys know how every year, for a long time, McDonald's had their, Monopoly sweepstakes.
Yep.
Now, do you guys remember how this worked?
Yeah, you get two out of the three pieces for an area, and you curse that you can never get the third.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wasn't there, like, some pattern to the way that the cups were printed, or the cups were distributed with the tickets printed and affixed, and they knew which big pack of sleeves or the box to nab?
Yeah.
Is that how that went? Because that was the rumor that I always heard when I worked at McDonald's.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
So basically, okay, so this is how Wikipedia explains how it works. So, originally, when it started out, they first started doing this in 87. Customers received a set of two tokens with every purchase, but now tokens come only with certain menu items. Basically, the tokens correspond to a property space on the Monopoly board, with the exception of, Golden Avenue / Arches Avenue quote-unquote properties that were added in the 2008 edition, and the Electric Company / Waterworks utilities that they added in 2014. When combined into color-matched properties, the tokens may be redeemed for money. Historically, the grand prize, which was about $1 million annuity only, had been the combination of the two most costly properties, which are Park Place and Boardwalk.
Yep.
But 2006-2007, the top prize, which was about $5 million, was awarded for collecting the four railroads. There's also instant win tokens that they can redeem for McDonald's food, but never for any food item that has game pieces or other prizes. And then the 2001 edition had the Pick Your Prize, in which winners could choose which of three ways they wanted their prizes awarded to them. And then in 2016, they changed all the prizes to cash, including the $1 million for Park Place and Boardwalk. So that's basically how the McDonald's Monopoly game works. Fairly sort of cut and dry, right?
Yeah.
Well, for a long time, people were realizing that there was something odd going down with how this money was being, how these prizes being won. And then they found out. From up until 2001, for about 13 years, the game was basically rigged by the mafia.
Yeah, there's a good bit here where they describe the group of people that were rigging this. Let me see if I can find it here. Because there's a hell of a list of types of people.
Yeah, if you really want to go into depth in it, go and read this article we got linked.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah. After installing a wiretap on Jacobson's phone, he realized that his tip had led to a supersized conspiracy. Jacobson was the head of a sprawling network of mobsters, psychics, strip club owners, convicts, drug traffickers, and even a family of Mormons who had falsely claimed more than $24 million in cash and prizes. But, so they got a tip from somebody within this organization, I guess. The FBI did, at least, and they investigated this. He had won the grand prize. Let's see, August 3rd, 2001. The McDonald's film crew arrived in Westerly, Rhode Island, to talk to Michael Hoover. And I think he was describing how he won it and all this, and the people kind of came to the realization that they were filming, like, this guy's bullshitting us.
Yeah.
Because he was going into great detail about things that only liars would really go into. This is all set up by the FBI, and there's a whole story here that the scroll bar is really long. People should really read this whole thing.
Basically, what you need to know is that it's surprisingly very easy to rig something like this in your favor if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, and that was probably a good time.
And McDonald's apparently didn't take that into account.
Yeah. Yeah, sort of the same way that a lot of things got rigged, for like, contests and such, as well as just a lot of business stuff in general. But now with like the internet's, involved, it's a little bit harder to do.
Yeah.
Especially now that they've just made all the prizes more generic, just money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, anyway, apparently this whole story is like so unbelievably elaborate and amazing that Fox, Ben Affleck, and Matt Damon have already won bid for the movie rights.
Yep. So they had a bunch of, studios and such, bid for this thing. Fox won it. Ben Affleck is attached to direct and Matt Damon is going to be the star. And what's cool is that this is just a list of all the other, groups that were lining up for bids. Universal is lined up with Kevin Hart to be the star. Warner Brothers lined up, John Requa and Glenn Ficarra,
mm-hmm.
To direct, write, whatever it is, and Steve Carell was gonna be the star.
Yeah.
Netflix was also in it with, producing partners Eric Newman and Brian Unkles, with Robert Downey Jr., Susan Downey, mm-hmm. to star, and I guess Todd Phillips as well.
Mm.
And it's like, oh, there's some really interesting people in there.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I'm all about this. I want to see this movie. Because this is just completely insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, next up in, here's some news that your boss is really gonna hate. A firm in New Zealand decided that they were gonna try an experiment. They were gonna do a 4-day work week.
Yeah, while you're still being paid for five.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I guess what that means is they do like, was it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, or was it, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, something
like
that?
Let's see, they ran the experiment. They reduced the work week to 32 hours from 40, from March and April this year, had separate researchers study the effects on the staff.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, 240 employees. Let's see, they reported 24% improvement in work-life balance,
mm-hmm.
and came back to work energized after the days off. Supervisors said staff were more creative, their attendance was better, they were on time, they didn't leave early or take long breaks. Actual job performance didn't change when doing it over 4 days instead of five. Let's see, Sweden experimented with a they had a trial in the city of Gothenburg, mandated 6-hour day, and officials found employees completed the same amount of work, or even more.
Mm-hmm.
But when France mandated a 35-hour work week in 2000, businesses complained of reduced competitiveness and increased hiring costs.
Yeah.
So it seems like the big, sort of conclusion come to is like, when you know you have more time off, you're more willing to work harder to get to that. Which, kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I can totally get with that.
Yeah, when I know I've got, a few days off, I'm willing to maybe not work, like, a ton harder, but I'm not as grumpy about it.
I'm not dreading it as much.
Yeah, there's less of, like, the midweek hump. Like, I just have to get past this day, and then I'll be a little bit better tomorrow.
Yeah. So, hint, hint. America.
Oh God.
That'd be nice.
We have such shitty work habits here.
Yeah, people from outside of the US look at the way Americans work and they're just like, you guys are killing yourselves.
Yeah, like not even the whole thing of like maternity and paternity leave not being guaranteed as a country. We're like one of the only countries in the world that doesn't have it. But even just shitty attitudes like you probably gotten hired and you're like, oh yeah, if you're feeling, sick, don't come in because we don't want you getting everybody else sick. And people still fucking come in. Cause they know that if you call off, people are just going to think, oh, there's nothing wrong with them. They're just being lazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's a fucking shitty attitude.
Yeah.
I even did that today. That somebody call off just made working a lot harder. It's like, oh, that fucking asshole, but also I don't really care.
A lot of people don't want to because they know that they're going to be so behind. It's going to be so shitty.
Yeah. If you have that sort of job where there's a specific list of things you have to do.
Right.
That's
downhill while you're gone.
And if you don't have any sort of hierarchy of like, oh, this person can handle this. Otherwise it's just all, oh yeah, you were gone. Yeah, get to work. Fucking finish your shit.
But, alright, this next one, Earth Overshoot Day, which was August 1st. Which is like the earliest it's ever been. What is this, Chris?
Yeah, so there is a group called, what are they called here? Global Footprint Network. And so Earth Overshoot Day is the day in which we have used up a year's worth of resources as a planet.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I'm already depressed.
Yeah, so they've been following this since, I think, about 1970. Or actually, 1970 is about when they started tracking it because we went over the limit as far as hitting, just over a year's worth of resources in less than a year. I guess before that, we were almost perfectly synced to the Earth's resources.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what happened. but yeah, so last year was August 2nd, this year August 1st. There's some good charts here showing, if everybody was like, these different countries, here's when we would hit it. Number one, who do you think would be the first to hit it?
United States.
Nope.
Or China.
Nope. Qatar.
Who is it?
Qatar. If everybody ran like Qatar, it'd be February 9th. Luxembourg is the 19th. United Arab Emirates is March 4th. And we come in fourth with March 15th.
Ah, well, we're
Canada is
there.
Number five with the 18th. China, where are they at? They are about June.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the best country? Vietnam, December 21st.
Wow.
Yep.
And Jamaica, Cuba, Colombia. That's a lot of countries that are either pretty small or not exactly industrious.
Yeah, I could see why Jamaica would be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're getting high all the time. That's their
problem.
Actually, it's because most of Jamaica tends to be fairly poor.
Yeah.
It's almost not quite abject poverty, but
yeah.
I felt really bad when we were there on our tour.
Oh, yeah. Like one of those vacation spots where it's like, oh yeah, our resort's way better than what everybody else has.
Yeah.
No. Like, there's no fucking comparison.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were living in corrugated tin shacks that were piecemeal together. I'm really not kidding.
Yeah.
It was like they were living in outhouses.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so. Yep. Let's see what else they have here. Yeah, and 28's predicting that we'll use the equivalent of 1.7 Earth's worth of resources. Which is, quite a bit more than what we have. We have the one.
Yeah.
I saw some charts sort of showing how, the different countries sort of operate. And I think ours is like, we use about 5 Earth's worth of resources. But yeah. They talk about there being, ways of, getting back towards, better, balance, which, includes things like, population, sort of having less kids, would definitely help lower the population. Mm-hmm. Less people, would be a good thing, especially for certain areas, which are a little bit too overcrowded. And things like, you know, getting off of fossil fuels would definitely help out a lot. For as much as we have a president that thinks they're the greatest thing ever. and doesn't know what clean coal is when he talks about it.
Yeah.
He thinks somebody's just cleaning up the coal, put it through the scrubbers. That's clean coal.
I bet he's never touched a hunk of coal in his whole life.
He's done the shovel thing. He did that in front of a bunch of people.
No, I mean actually touch it.
Yeah, I'm saying that's the closest he's got.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
He's doing the shovel motion. And doesn't even look like an actual shovel.
Yeah.
He's never touched a shovel. Yeah. Maybe when he broke ground, I guess, maybe. But.
Yeah, well. All right, so next up. So there is the tree frog, right? We all know what a tree frog is.
Yep.
Cute.
And,
I see a picture of one on a billboard that's supposed to be about God.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it's a weird thing. I see a billboard that says, "Lust kills, Jesus saves." Same people.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
It's great for like, what the fuck is this billboard? It has a picture of a tree frog. It's like, yeah, God makes great, I don't know what, I forget what it says, but it's ridiculous. Like, call this number. I was like, yeah, I don't want to call this number and ask you about your fucking billboard.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so the point is, so we got the tree frog and the main species of the tree frog. This week we actually discovered there's a new species of tree frog. And why haven't we found this new species of tree frog until now? Because people have been confusing it with the main species since 1925.
Yep. And, yeah, the new name is Sylvia's tree frog, named after the granddaughter of the guy that sort of came to this realization. Cool. Scientific name is Cruziohyla sylviae. Yeah, so they discovered, this frog in Panama in 1902. Mm. They now realize that, it was, let's see, yeah, they first observed it as scientists in 1925, but kind of never really observed it too close to compare it to the main species. Hmm. So yeah, now they know there are two unique species of tree frogs. I saw a nice video of a guy holding this thing, and it's kind of crazy looking. Cause just the sort of hands and feet. The kind of like suction cuppy. And it looks really neat. They also found out because they realized it's a different species that they're really, really rare. They think there are fewer than 50 in the wild. And about 150 of them. Let's see, the splendid tree frog, I think is the original one. So they're found about 50 of those. About 150 of Sylvia's tree frogs. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing scientists go back to the things they think they've discovered, realize, oh, mm-hmm. this is actually something else.
Yeah.
Met
with dinosaurs, a bunch of dimes now, and
yeah.
I haven't done it with tree frogs.
Yep. Oh, yeah, I remember it's somehow the tree frog proved that God exists.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how, I want to call them up and I need you to explain this one to me.
Yeah. Like, can you know, what's the connection here? But, anyway, okay, so, next story that we've got here. Another, science story. So, guess what? We finally found water on Mars.
Yes.
And not just ice, actually. They have detected a lake of water that's deep below the Martian polar ice cap.
Yep. Yep, on the South Pole is a lake of liquid water, detected from orbit using ice penetrating radar. The lake is probably rigid and full of salts, an unlikely habitat for life, but, still it's a big find.
Mm-hmm.
Especially we've been getting closer and closer to finding water. It's like, oh, there's like, evidence of water used to be, in certain places and like see the after effects of it and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so they are, let's see, what is this? This is from the Mars Advanced Radar for Subsurface and Ionospheric Sounding. MARSIS. Mm. It's an instrument the European Space Agency has, on their Mars Express orbiter, which launched in 2003. Beams down pulses of radio waves and listens for reflections. Some of the waves bounced off the surface, but others penetrate up to 3 kilometers and can be reflected by sharp transitions in buried layers, such as going from ice to rock. So there's some pretty cool tech they have going on with that.
Mm-hmm.
And be interesting to see when they can actually get rovers down there that can actually start investigating that part of the part of Mars a lot more.
Yeah.
Yep. That'll be amazing to see.
And then when they disappear, well, shit has gone down.
Yeah. You.
That's half of the Mars movies.
Yeah. That's how it always happens. They get down there, and then something kills it.
Isn't that one of the sequels to 2001? Is on.
I think it is.
On one of the moons, Io, I think it is.
I'm thinking.
Or maybe that's something else. And there's a horror movie about going to Io. There's shit under the ice.
Mm-hmm. But, alright, so, moving on from there. Tesla. Yeah, once again, as usual, Elon Musk has too much money and he isn't quite sure what to do with it. So, for reasons nobody's really sure about, the next car OS update that they're gonna do is gonna throw in some classic Atari games.
Yep. Version 9.0. Some of best classic at Atari games coming as Easter eggs in Tesla V9.0 release in about 4 weeks. Thanks, at Atari. So somebody sent him like a list of games that they liked from the Atari, and he's like, oh, these three are the ones I'm looking at. So that's Pole Position, Tempest, and Missile Command, which are some good ones. How are you going to play them? Touchscreen, I guess, on the dashboard in the middle.
Hopefully while parked.
Yeah, they don't really he's not very much detailing this stuff. Especially if they're supposed to be Easter eggs. I guess he probably wouldn't. But people will figure that out once they do release them. But yeah, also part of this update is some stuff that actually might be useful. What they call party and camper mode. But the way it's been described is that it uses the electricity stored in the battery pack to power the climate control system, some of the lights, and the sound system for 48 hours or more. It would also allow the car to charge mobile devices. So make it like the most expensive battery charger you could get. And draw a considerable amount of power from the battery pack, so users would need to ensure they're parked next to a charging station or are not far from one. It's not much of a camping experience, I guess. Mm-hmm. You have to be next to a charging station, which are mostly in like parking lots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're going camping to the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to Walmart's parking lot to camp out.
Yep. You laugh, but people do that.
Oh, yeah. I've seen RVs parked out there for longer than they probably should be.
Yeah.
Where I'm not sure if they've abandoned them or if they're somehow living in them.
Oh, they're probably living there, but they've probably been hounded by the security to get off the property at least a dozen times.
Yeah.
Yep.
And all right, finally, our penultimate stop for the night. Before we get to the entertainment portion, you guys are familiar with Planet Fitness, right?
Yes.
It's a chain of gyms that are meant to be, as they call it, judgment-free zone. The idea is that you go in there and you don't have to deal with, like, you know, those overly aggressive musclehead guys, meatheads, you know, constantly working out their anger at the rebar, you know. You don't have to feel judged about what your body shape is. You can just go there and work out. Everyone's really supportive. But apparently this one dude took it a little too literally because he went to the Planet Fitness, stripped down, and exercised naked. And he was arrested, and when they told him, you know, why did you think he did this, he said, I thought it was a judgment-free zone.
Uh-huh.
That only goes so far.
Mm-hmm.
Well, judgment-free is fine, but we don't want your fecal matter coming out of your butt hair crack getting on the freaking yoga mat.
Yeah, exactly.
You only want so much sweat on everything.
And the whole thing is, he looks like that guy who plays Rosa's boyfriend on Brooklyn Nine-Nine a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I can totally hear that actor. I know he does so many other things with his weird-ass voice. You know, I thought it was a judgment-free zone.
Yeah.
Hearing it in that guy's voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this just seems like one of the archetype of people you would find at this sort of place. Here's a guy that's a little too into himself. He's a little too free-flowing.
Judgment-free zone. Judgment-free zone. It's just a judgment-free zone.
I mean, if you're not in one, you can judge all you want.
Oh, yeah.
He's not a very manicured looking man.
Nope.
he's got the nasty beard, and he's only like 32, and he looks like he has this big gray ass Gandalf beard, but that's all scriggly, scraggly, nasty, wasty.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Let's see. He had drug paraphernalia in his possession when he was arrested.
Oh, what a shock.
I don't know, man. I want to go wash my hands after just clicking on the picture of him.
Yeah. I don't blame you. But, all right. So, finally we're getting to the entertainment portion. And the first thing is, we now know what the cast of Star Wars Episode IX was announced. And yes, the late Carrie Fisher is in it.
Yep. Yeah, they specifically mentioned they have B-roll from Episode 7 that they're going to be using for this. So I'm very much curious. I think like everybody's like wondering how they're going to make this work.
They got the might of, you know, they got the might and resources of the mouse behind them, so they'll find a way.
Yeah. Yeah, there's probably tons of footage that they have on the cutting floor that they can use. But yeah, they have like pretty much everybody you expect returning, and even Kelly Marie Tran. Just in case you thought the harassment would keep her away, it's not. New people they have, Naomi Ackie, Richard E. Grant, and Carrie Russell. Along with Mark Hamill's returning, Anthony Daniels, and Billy Dee Williams, who obviously going to be playing Lando Calrissian. So yeah, we're going to find Mark Hamill on the nudist planet. That's what he keeps pushing.
Yeah. They're going to see me on the nudist planet.
Yeah, he's got the toy and everything. He's got the toy of the robe and the rock.
Oh, my God.
It's going to be interesting to see what they do with Princess Leia.
Yep.
Or General Leia, as you know.
Yes.
See how they wrap up that story.
Yeah, it's not going to be... They're not going to be able to do anything like what they did with... Rogue One.
Yeah.
Where it was CG Leia.
Yeah.
Yeah. And very obviously CG Leia.
Yeah. Still looked really good for what it was, but they weren't fooling anybody.
CG Tarkin.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now, finally, we come to the last part of the show. We got trailers from the San Diego Comic-Con. And Reb went there, and he is probably regretting every last bit of it. On the plus side, though, he ended up getting into good graces with Xavier from the New Day. So,
yeah.
God, I hope he somehow gets Xavier to come on the show. That'd just be that would be so much fun. I want to do the intro. You know.
Yep.
Don't you dare, Brisawa! I want to do that so badly. But, alright, so the first trailer we got was from Aquaman.
Yep.
And,
looks pretty good, though we don't see much of it. It's just like a little bit of, origin story stuff. Then, like, you gotta go save Atlantis. And then,
like,
swimming through, and he's gotta go swimming through the water.
Mm-hmm.
with all the sharks and shit. It's like, okay. A little more jokey than you'd think. But, manages to not fall into the trap of, and this guy talks to the fish, he's gay. The sort of thing that everybody thought about Aquaman for the longest time.
Yeah, well, because he was just the most useless of all of them.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he can talk to fish. Okay.
And then he puts this guy in that role, and it's like, okay, we can't do that anymore. Yeah. He'll beat your face in.
He's this gigantic Maori dude who looks like he could pick you up and snap you in half with two fingers.
Yep.
Polynesian. Something like that. But, yeah. And then the next trailer that we've got is M. Night Shyamalan's newest vehicle, Glass. Now, for those of you who don't remember, M. Night kind of made a bit of a comeback recently with his last movie, which was, I think it was
Split.
Called Split.
Yeah.
And the movie before that, which was it Visitors or something like that?
Something like that.
I can't remember what it's called. But basically the point is, the big thing with the Split, on top of being, you know, a pretty good movie in its own right, was that the stinger at the very end, which showed that it's actually the, part of the same universe that,
Unbreakable.
Unbreakable with Bruce Willis and,
yep.
Was it Samuel L. Jackson?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And now this is Glass, and it's bringing it all together.
Yep.
And,
it's like, hey, here's, an M. Night Shyamalan movie people are actually excited about.
Actually go, yeah.
Aren't just like, where's the twist?
Yeah.
That's a shitty twist. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Then they make racist jokes about his last name.
I paid my $10. I just want to see what the twist is going to be.
Oh, it's the water.
Yeah. That is a dumbass twist.
Yeah, but that's how all that shit happens when aliens invade. Because there's War of the Worlds. It's like, oh, they just get sick.
Yeah, because they basically just die off from
the flu
and stuff that they hadn't grown on immunities to. Yep.
Oh god, what was the funny one where they blew up their heads with music?
That was Mars Attacks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was,
you can't handle this, this country music.
Was it country music?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was,
Was that or, like swooner music?
It was Tom Jones.
Well, he was in it.
Yeah.
He sang his own music, but there was that like really high pitched music.
Something like that. Old school like show music.
Slim Whitman's Indian Love Call.
Okay. Everybody knows that.
Wow. Thank you, Google, because good God.
Yeah. I wouldn't have been able to figure that one out otherwise.
Yeah, I just liked, was it Vin Rames, wasn't it? Or who was that? Mm-hmm. The boxer and just beats the shit out of him.
Yep. But, alright, so, the next one we've got is Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Yeah, this looks really cool.
Yeah.
Really good culmination of the Godzilla and King Kong monster universe thing that Warner Brothers has been pushing.
Yeah.
And sort of, okay, here's all the big monsters you know from Godzilla. And they're duking it out. And they got some really cool imagery in this trailer. Especially with the Godzilla shooting the blue laser up into the sky.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole thing that ties this into climate change.
Yeah.
Like, you need Godzilla to actually reverse it. It's like, man, imagine if that's how we solved climate change here. We just need Godzilla.
It's kind of just their way. Because for those of you who've never seen the original Gojira from back in the 50s, it was basically it was an atom bomb allegory. And, like, that the original movie, despite for the fact that it's a guy in a rubber suit in a cardboard city, it's actually really dreary, and it kind of ends on kind of a gray note.
Yeah.
And not, you know, just because it's in black and white, but...
Sorry.
You know.
Yep.
That was amusing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we got Godzilla, Mothra, Rodan, and King Ghidorah.
Yeah.
I wonder if we get...
That DVD is making it into... Well, Scott and Jacob have every single Godzilla DVD that's been released. They're watching them right now.
Yeah.
I've been wondering, has there been a English release for Shin Godzilla? That's the one I really want to see.
You gotta ask Scott.
Yeah, because for those who don't know, Shin Godzilla was directed by the guy who did Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Okay.
Yeah, that's him.
Really?
Is that the most recent Japanese one?
Yeah, I think it is. It's the one where it's sort of like, instead of being mostly about the A-bomb, this one is very much reminiscent, meant to be sort of to tie into the Fukushima nuclear disaster.
Yeah.
That happened after the earthquake and the typhoon.
Yeah.
So after that, we of course have, this is my Michael Bay, isn't it?
Nope.
Rise. Oh, damn it.
No, this is the new show.
Oh, the new TV show.
Yeah.
Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and no, Michael Bay is not involved.
Nope. This is the new Nickelodeon show. For whatever reason, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles since, was it the Fox Kids show? Has just kind of not lasted, had any of those last for very long. It's been like a few seasons and then they do something new, which, that can be cool. But I kind of would like to see one just keep going.
Well, I think that's partly a strategic thing.
Yeah, probably contractual thing too.
Yeah, and also, I don't think they want to oversaturate the market like they did back in the 90s.
Yeah.
So they kind of, yeah.
Yeah. I think the first episode, you can actually get this on their YouTube channel, if you want to watch it. The issue I have just from watching this, like, the turtles are a little bit too angular.
Mm.
They got lots of, just weird angles to them. Like, Raphael's shell looks like it's jagged.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that just looks a little bit weird.
It looks like old school, like, Newgrounds flash animation.
Yeah.
Basically. But you never know.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of which, because I have to bring this up, because you know we do. She-Ra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heard about this, right?
Yeah, all the people were angry she wasn't hot. They didn't care about her in the first place.
Yeah. I swear, I hate the internet sometimes. Like, I want to burn the internet down.
Yeah.
I know it's impossible, but I want to do it anyway.
You want to find a way to inject a virus that sets their computer on fire if they complain about She-Ra?
Because after a while, it's just, people just find the stupidest things to get mad about.
Yeah. And it's like, if you don't like it, don't watch it.
Yeah.
Not everything has to be for you.
Not everything has to be a fan service fest.
Yeah.
Creepy 30-year-olds.
Right?
Yeah. I saw a good tweet. It was like, whenever the show came out, like 1981 or whatever, it's like, She-Ra is awesome. 1982, nothing. It just keeps going, nothing. 2018, they ruined She-Ra.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, whatever.
Actually, She-Ra came out in the mid-80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just...
She was a spinoff of He-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the tweet essentially went like that, like, here's a timeline of opinions about She-Ra.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the first one was like, She-Ra sucks, and then she's like, oh, they ruined She-Ra. It's like, you didn't like it before in the first place.
Right.
Yeah, She-Ra was originally meant to be the girl's line.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like Prince Adam's sister through some...
I mean, she had crossover appeal, and that was a boon for them, but she was always meant to be towards the girl market.
Yeah.
And I mean, I hate the fact that toys and stuff like that have to be between a boy and a girl market, but that's what she was made for.
Yeah.
You know, well, in the 80s, it was very much a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember.
They didn't have, like, Japan's concept of fan service for the male demographic.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I listened to Retronauts in the last couple months, and they went over, like, video game commercials. And they talked a lot about how in the 70s, a lot of commercials just advertised to kids in general. Not boys or not girls. Oftentimes they had girls like, oh, haha, you're an old person. You don't understand video games, but I do. I'm a girl. Mm-hmm. Then at a certain point in the 80s, like when the Atari scene crashed and Nintendo rose up, that's where it started to go. Video games are for boys now.
Because the reason they did that was specifically a bit of marketing, because the game, the way the games market had crashed so badly that it had kind of blotted the reputation of video games, basically decided they were going to sell the Nintendo Entertainment System in the toy section instead of the video game section.
That's why I had Rob the Robot in there.
Yeah.
It's like, see, this is a toy and a VCR.
So they decided to put it in the toy section, and they decided they were going to put it in the girl section or the boy section, and ended up in the boy section.
Yep.
And that's why video games, you know, post-1985 have basically been soaking in testosterone.
Yeah. It's all thanks to Nintendo. You ruined everything, Nintendo.
Well, they did try.
And of course, we say that, but then you see a lot of what they put out for the Famicom in Japan, and you know, that kind of thing isn't really a thing over there. But
yeah, they had banking software on the Famicom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't give a shit about
this one game that I felt guilty about playing. I mean, as like a little 8-year-old, I felt guilty about playing this one game. Maybe I was 9 on the Atari. And it was a Strawberry Shortcake game. And it was the stupidest fucking game. Oh my god.
Well,
it was stupid to begin with.
That was a lot of licensed game on there.
Oh,
yeah. If you go watch Nolan North and Troy Baker on their Retro Replay YouTube channel, their first game is Spider-Man on the Atari 2600.
Mm-hmm.
Which, the entire point of the game is Spider-Man uses his webs to climb up a building.
Mm-hmm.
That's the game.
Oh, my God.
And they can't figure it out because it's a really shitty game.
Yep.
And then
it's actually really funny because I remember I've seen, like, old commercials for that.
Yeah.
For that game. Like, the Nostalgia Critic did one on one of his commercial episodes, and I swear the dude playing Green Goblin has snorted some coke before he did it, because...
Yeah.
Yeah, it was this crazy little thing where you had to match the bottoms and the tops and the middles of the music was cool, though. But
yeah.
I, you know, even then I felt bad. I'm like, I guess I knew that it was pandering. pandering.
That's a problem a lot of developers had, trying to figure out how to make games for girls.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what year that came out.
Yeah. But, anyway. And finally, we've got our trailer for Shazam.
Yep. A lot more humor than I was expecting, from being like a DC Universe thing.
Yeah, but that might end up being for the show's favor, because...
Yeah. Yeah, so, if you don't know, Shazam is a superhero, essentially
a kid who
meets a wizard who basically gives him the ability to transform into essentially kind of like a Superman-style hero by saying his name, which is Shazam.
Shazam. Which are the magic words, yeah.
But you listen to that premise, and you're like, this is some weird shit. Yelling out the name of the man who gives you the power. Puts the power inside you.
Mm-hmm.
That's some weird shit. But, the trailer goes a lot of, like, him coming back to the real world and with his power, and they're just kind of testing out what he can do because they have no idea what's going on.
Yep.
And this is like some of the cool stuff that usually happens in like Spider-Man origin stories. He's like, well, what can I do with this power?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where some really good stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
And, the titular, Shazam is played by Zachary Levi.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems like pretty good casting.
Yeah.
For as much as you don't think of him as like a muscle-bound guy, but he apparently worked out a lot for that.
Mm-hmm.
As well as just having a suit that kind of looks like it was adds some to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to see where that goes. Looks neat so far.
Yeah.
That is out April 5th, 2019.
Yeah.
Warner Brothers, I think, did all of these movies
mm-hmm.
that we talked about, which I guess that's what happens when Disney says, "Nah, we're going to pass on this one."
Yeah.
Okay, Glass was
Warner
Universal.
Brothers is like, we'll catch it, we'll catch it, we'll catch it.
And they didn't fuck it up.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. Yeah. You got Godzilla, Aquaman, and Shazam.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow it's better than the fucking Justice League movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder why. But as you don't know, you actually could not read the original Shazam comics for like decades. Back when it was originally called Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Because, so it was originally, it came out in, I think it was the late 30s, in the, I'm trying to remember, let me look it up, because the whole story of how Shazam came into existence is really fascinating. Basically, it was, okay, so for those who don't know, the wizard that actually gave Shazam his powers is himself named Shazam. Basically, he was created by writer Bill Parker and artist C.C. Beck. And originally they premiered in the second issue of Wiz Comics 1940 by Fawcett. And here's what happened. Eventually, he got more popular than Superman. And part of it had to do with the fact that it was being drawn by C.C. Beck, who was... He was not originally, when he got into... doing Captain Marvel, he was not part of the superhero stable of artists. He was actually involved in like the other types of comic books, like funny animal stuff or stuff you'd see in like the Sunday papers, you know. And so what it did is it ended up giving his artwork a more dynamic and kind of cartoonish approach that didn't look nearly as stiff as what Joe Shuster was doing with Superman. And because of it, he got his own radio show. He got a very popular movie serial that's actually considered to be like the best of those old school movie serials, like up there with like Flash Gordon. And then eventually he got so popular that DC stepped in and was like, no, he's too much like our character, and that was basically the death of Captain Marvel.
Yep.
But
now Marvel has the Captain Marvel.
Yeah. The difference there is that his name is Mar-Vell.
Yeah.
Well, the original Captain Marvel, his name is Mar-Vell.
Yeah.
It's very obvious what they were trying to do, but anyway, so I do believe we've had a show, folks. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you've got a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, something you want to write in, something you just want us to read, you can contact us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've got it linked in the show notes. Furthermore, outside of iTunes, you can subscribe to our little bit of literal insanity on such places as Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, Archive.org, and everywhere where oral chocolate like ours is recorded and given for your delicious hearing pleasure. That was a sentence I just said. So, all of us here at Let's Weekend, we'd like to wish you, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Hopefully, we will be back to the regular schedule next week. Phil told us that his parts are supposed to come in Wednesday. We're not sure yet if we're going to be having a day zero update this week. You'll have to stay tuned for that. But until then, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Teresa Sammons and Chris Logie, I'd like to say good night, sleep tight. We still got till November, folks.